Today, what do you know? It's Tuesday. It's November 23rd. And what time is it? It's 1:21 in the afternoon. Hi, this is John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals. You can listen to me weekdays on WGN Radio from 9 to noon.
John Hanson, you can listen to me on WGN on Saturday afternoons. Catch me at the Blackhawks games in the arena and with Block Club Chicago.
Brandon Pope here from WCIU.
Lisa Donovan with the Chicago Tribune.
And Eric Zorn, the very thankful editor and publisher of the Picayune Sentinel.
Oh, that's nice, Eric. That's nice of you to put it that way. I thought you were going to say, I actually had in my mind, I know what Eric's going to say. I'm Eric Zorn, and I have clean toenails. But you didn't go there, so... We'll get to that story in just a second. By the way, John is wearing a knit cap. Lisa is wearing a knit cap. Is it cold where you are, Lisa?
We're trying to save on those natural gas bills. So, yeah, a little bit.
My gas bill went up about eightfold from the previous month.
Sure.
Holy shnikey. I was stunned.
I just came in from the Christmas tree getting. So that's
very nice. Yeah, you two are about to have a little micro fight about whether or not it's okay to put your Christmas tree up before Thanksgiving. John, your witness.
I would say that I like to have it lit and all the decorations done, but like the unveiling of it won't be till we come home from Thanksgiving. But I don't want it a moment later than that. And I don't want to do it the day after Thanksgiving when everyone else is doing it.
And then do you leave it up like through February?
No, I'm a January 1st. Once it's the new year, I'm ready for that thing to be gone.
Lisa?
No, December 1 or thereafter. I want Thanksgiving to live on its own. I love it. I love that there's no commercialism around it or any of that stuff. And I want to sort of live off of that.
Brandon, you'll be the judge and jury in this.
Ooh, I love being the judge and jury. Well, I have to side with Lisa here. You got to give Thanksgiving its proper due. Okay. You got to let it breathe. Let it space out before you start doing trees and stuff. So I'm team Lisa on this one. I'm sorry, John Hanson.
Wholesome pilgrims we should honor for all their good deeds.
No, I was just going to say, we're not honoring the history of it. We're honoring it in this moment in time.
Exactly. So,
you know? Yeah, no.
Mm-hmm.
Togetherness, okay. Family, mac and cheese.
I got into an argument with a friend at work about whether or not stuffing is the best food in the universe. The correct answer is yes. He did not agree with me on that.
I was not aware until maybe just a few years ago that mac and cheese was a tradition. It's largely an African-American tradition at Thanksgiving. What a great tradition. I'd love it if we adopted that here in our very white household. It's a terrific meal.
It is. And guess who got entrusted with the responsibility this year of baking the mac and cheese?
Oh.
The big honor.
And responsibility, right. Like, are you in trouble if you get that wrong?
Absolutely. Like, the family hates me. I can get kicked out. There could be fights. Like,
wow.
You got to do well with the mac and cheese.
You're entrusted with it, Brandon. I'm going to assume that people know that you can make it. Right?
I've been known to make a good baked mac and cheese.
Okay, well then, all right.
I am all fine with letting that be a black tradition, and it would. I don't want to be on record as a white dude trying to take that tradition away.
Nice.
So
nice
maybe
out.
I should just
nice
stop
out.
Right now.
Yeah.
If you ever try to buy elbow macaroni in like the week of Thanksgiving, good luck to you. It is, the shelves are bare.
So it was self-defense. I was being attacked. That's not Kyle Rittenhouse now. That's Travis McMichael, the Georgia man who, in trying to make a citizen's arrest, shot and killed Ahmaud Arbery. Arbery, a black man, was jogging through the neighborhood. McMichael, a white man, thinking he might be a thief, chased him in a truck. There was a confrontation in front of the truck. McMichael got shot, Arbery got shot. The jury has the case as we speak, so here we go again, trying to say something for the record, even as the facts might change while we're recording this. But I do think there's some things that are very similar to these two cases and some things that are very different. The prosecutor in this case has a much better case. And in this case, I think if no convictions are returned, it's more likely that unrest could result.
In these two different cases, we also see what good defense money can buy and what bad defense money doesn't buy. I think the defense has done a terrible job in the Arbery case, and they've got no funding. Rittenhouse was funded with millions of dollars for his defense and found great lawyers. Now, I think he has a stronger case, too. Kyle Rittenhouse did as well. I think it's a further uphill climb for the defense. I hate prognosticating because I got it wrong last time, but I would be really shocked if there wasn't some serious, whether it's felony murder or malice murder or all the different counts that the judge read this morning. I'd be shocked if these guys were found not guilty.
Well, the judge did, he said that he defined this sort of prior citizen's arrest is only applicable if a person sees a felony actually being committed and then acts without delay. In my mind, the core defense that these folks were chasing a person suspected of committing not a crime just that day, but a number of crimes over a stretch of, what was it, 6 months to a year? That was sort of central then, too, with the defense now saying that there should be a mistrial.
How does that make it a mistrial? I mean, if those are the rules, those are the rules. What's unfair about that?
The defense gets the right to sort of argue that.
The law says about citizens' arrest in Georgia.
I think it's open to interpretation. You know, these sort of self-defense citizens' arrest law, which is more in focus in the Arbery case, I think it leaves it open for a lot of interpretation. I do agree with John about who has the better attorney can sort of argue their case and make this sort of a very cut and dry case, and that sort of, you know, Rittenhouse had millions on his side, not so much in the defendants in the Arbery case. In either case, it's up to prosecution and the defense to sort of argue what this law means, because it's not very clear in either case. It just seems like all of these laws are just outdated. And now that we're so polarized in this nation, you're never going to get any kind of reforms to sort of make them a little more, I don't know, to have some form, to have some sort of, this is what it is, this isn't what it is.
They did change the law
in Georgia.
After the fact, so they're being tried on the previous law. The key difference to me between these two, or certainly one main difference, is that the victim, the person who died, the person who was shot to death, was being chased by people with a gun. That those people were provoking him, threatening him, chasing him, which was not the case in Rittenhouse. Rittenhouse himself was being chased. The person who fired the shot was being chased, and that's what precipitated the incident. In this case, Arbery, who was out for a jog, and I guess he trespassed onto a house under construction, these three guys are chasing after him with a gun, and so he's scared out of his mind, which I would think you would be.
Yeah.
And I don't see how the people who are chasing him regain the right of self-defense. People have a right to self-defense, but you lose that right when you are provocatively chasing someone with a gun. So I even under the most generous reading of the self-defense law, it would seem to me that these guys are guilty. And I think there's a really significant difference in those facts and case. So I would expect a conviction here.
It's a literal versus a legal defense. I think you're right that he doesn't legally have that defense in his back pocket. But if you and I are struggling with a gun and I'm afraid you're going to take the gun and shoot me, this might be what McMichael's people are saying, that I'm going to defend myself. I've got to ward you off. Never mind how we got to this moment. They must be trying to persuade the jury that he had good intentions. Well, I watched some of the closing arguments. He had good intentions. Yes. You know, do you want to live in a world where we just sit back like sheep and watch these people do this to our neighborhoods?
The prosecuting attorney argued just what you were saying, that you cannot create this sort of, you cannot be the one who sort of creates this danger and then argues, oh, I'm defending myself against this danger that I, in fact, created. I brought the gun to this thing, but now I'm defending myself against somebody who's grabbing my gun. That doesn't make any sense, legally or even common sense-wise.
Yeah, you can't start something and claim self-defense. And that's what both prosecutions argued when it came to the Rittenhouse trial and this trial. Just that with this trial, it's a lot more clear. And they have a better case, and they're doing a better job arguing their case as well. I'd be shocked if the McMichaels get nothing. I'd be shocked if they walk free. Whereas with Rittenhouse, I wasn't shocked at all. That was not surprising in the slightest.
a lot of the response to Rittenhouse was this, the verdict was trust the jury system. The jury system's the best system. And I think that is a little palatable in the Kyle Rittenhouse case for a lot of people that even thought Kyle Rittenhouse was a punk. I don't know how anyone can trust the jury system if they, these two get off. I mean, this is just, I'd be aghast.
On that jury, you've got one black man.
Right.
And I believe you have a woman of color, and the rest are white people. Like,
I mean, what are we looking at? What's wrong with our country fundamentally?
What are you saying, Brandon, that white people can't return a guilty verdict in this case?
Not at all. But I think when you have a case like this one that is so clearly has so much racial tensions involved, I think putting white people on there gives the impression that whiteness is objectivity on issues of race. And that isn't the case at all. If you wanted a fair jury, then I think you at least, make it equal parts and then let the facts decide themselves. But when you have only one black person in a case where many people are looking at this as racial discrimination, the prosecution is arguing that this is racially motivated, it just kind of skews things.
And not to go too far down the line, because if they come back guilty, then this is all for naught. Right. But I mean, the system of how we pick jurors favors white juries overwhelmingly, in that a lot of black working class Americans cannot take the day off, take weeks off for little pay. I mean, it's already skewed in favor of white people serving on juries.
I think the area where this happened is about 25 of the county is like 25% black, I think is what I read. And there, as Brandon points out, there's one black person on the jury. And, I think that in this case is racially charged. I think it's more racially charged than the prosecution really argued. That they, as I read the articles, they sort of stayed away from that part of the case in their closings. They alluded to it, but they didn't really hammer on the fact that these guys profiled Arbery. It seems very clear that they did. That if this had been a white guy, they might have just said, "Hey, get out of here, buddy. That's a house under construction." This looked like a pretty obvious case of racial profiling, which means that you probably ought to have a representative sample of the community on your jury. And that if it comes and the defense team managed to keep black people off the jury, they managed to challenge them off the jury. And that was very troubling to me. And I think, it could. And again, you're right, John Hansen, we're talking before the verdict, so maybe this is all going to be moot. But boy, if it comes back not guilty, the only one who I think might be not guilty is the guy who shot the video, who was kind of following in his pickup truck. I don't know how culpable. Legally, I guess he was part of the group that was chasing him, but he wasn't the one who fired the shot. He says he doesn't even know they were armed. He might have a different verdict than the other two, and especially the one who fired the shot. But in any case, I think that this jury issue and the race issue here is going to play a much larger role than it did in Rittenhouse.
Well, maybe I shouldn't take it personally, but as a white person, I'd be happy to convict this guy. I was going to convict Kyle Rittenhouse, too. Absolutely, the jury should be of your peers in the community. And if it's not representative, then that in and of itself is a problem. But I'm hopeful that white people can be fair. Even 12 randomly chosen white people or 11 randomly chosen white people in Georgia can be fair. You look a little sheepish there, Brandon, like, yeah, good luck to you on that.
I mean, that's the hope and that's the dream, right? I just don't know if in that part of Georgia I can exactly give my hopes up when it comes to that, right? I think.
But the facts are on the. But just like Eric said, but they didn't even argue the racial point so much because it seems to me like the facts are so in their favor.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this ain't To Kill a Mockingbird, John.
Yeah, I have worked at other newspapers in other parts of the country. You really start to understand that the laws, some of the laws might be the very same thing from state to state to state, but that culturally we are all, this is a country that we're not all the same. We don't look at the world the same. I'm hoping that this doesn't go too deep into it, but I can always remember covering a case, first trial outside of Cincinnati. It's the only Appalachian County in Ohio. They were in the midst of wrapping up this big trial and then trying to figure out how they were interviewing people who had been jurors in rape cases. rape cases and incest cases because they could not convict on those cases. And a lot of people were saying, and it doesn't have to, anything to do with it, but it just shows you sort of like the in a smaller community, they didn't think that the law should be involved in these kinds of cases, that there should be sort of the church should be dealing with these things.
I think in both cases, you're seeing a reinforced point of why these elections for judges and clerks and things like that really, really matter. We're looking at Georgia's judicial system, and we're seeing flaws, right? That they could have a mostly white jury and only one black person on that jury. It's designed that way. That's how it was designed to be. It's not a mistake. That's how it was intended. There are some states that have been working to try to change that. You know, California recently, I believe Washington as well. But, you know, your courts matter, your judges matter, these laws matter. And, you know, racial discrimination in the court system, this is where it shows up when you're selecting jurors and striking jurors out and things like that. Even the judge in this Arbery trial was saying that, you know, there's a clear impression of racial discrimination here because of the way the jury is. So I think people just really need to know that they need to focus on not just the sexy picks for your elections and when you're voting. Look all up and down that ballot, because that's where change really happens.
Sexy, a relative term in that sentence there, Brent.
But, yes. You know, and everything I said really does get pretty thin when the defense attorney playing to that all-white jury describes Arbery.
Turning Ahmaud Arbery into a victim after the choices that he made does not reflect the reality of what brought Ahmaud Arbery to Satilla Shores in his khaki shorts with no socks to cover his long, dirty toenails.
I mean, what a bizarre thing to reference. However tempting it was, you almost think, don't go there, lady, don't go there, don't push that button. She pushed that button.
She pushed that button, and so that made me, that started making me think about sort of, okay, what is that? She's conveying this thing to this jury that we get each other, right? That's all I could think of.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I mean, yeah. It was
a wink. It was definitely.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And you think about the history of this law there, this law evolved from, it began with, I was reading a column about it. It began, this law that allows people to make these citizens arrests began as a law to help slave owners arrest their slaves or have other people arrest and take into custody slaves who might be escaping. It was amended during Jim Crow to crack down on African Americans, certain laws that apply to them, sort of whether it would be going down a street that they supposedly shouldn't be going down, et cetera. It evolved from that. So you really cannot get away from the idea that racism is plays a big role in this law and how it is enforced. I highly doubt you're going to see African-American men going into doing this, going out and maybe making this arrest of somebody that they suspected.
I hate to do that. I hate to do that, but I've thought that very thing in the Rittenhouse case too, or January 6th for that matter.
Just change
the race of all of the players. Oh my God, does that give you a different perspective? I mean, can you imagine if Arbery were white and these gentlemen were black? I shouldn't even do this. What the reaction on Fox News would be, or elsewhere? I mean, it would just be a completely different story.
And I think that's to Eric Zorn's point of why, you know, why prosecutors have not hammered the race thing down. I think they're trying their best not to make this an us versus them battle, white versus black, because I think that inflames people. That puts people in corners when they start getting defensive, and that's the last thing they want them to do.
I think you're absolutely right about that, John. I think that it's very deliberate on the part of the prosecutors that they decided to stay away from that, because when you've got 11 white people on the jury, if you say this is about race, you're going to maybe knock one or two of them into a really staunch position that you make it hard to come up with a guilty verdict. So it's probably right. I'll be interested to see what happens after the trial and you hear what the prosecution was thinking. Mm-hmm.
Guys, I don't want to ignore this story, but I don't have a lot to say about it with any broad strokes because, A, we don't know a lot, and, B, it was just awful. Daryl Brooks plowed his red SUV through the Santa Parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin on Sunday. As we sit here now, 5 dead, and I think the number is still 40, or is it a little more than that, injured now? Police are recommending intentional homicide charges on all 5. I don't know that it was preventable, although maybe if this guy had been held on previous counts, he wouldn't be there. But
you mean like the previous count where he tried to run over a woman in the gas station?
Yeah. And was go on $1,000 bail.
That's offensive. But I mean, so here we go again. I guess we do have something to say about this. You cannot anticipate what people are going to do when they get released. And you can't hold everybody forever. So this is what will happen sometimes. I don't know that making bad law fixes it.
I don't know that it's creating a different law. I think it's judges using common sense here. This person tried to run somebody else over. I mean, it's a particularly brutal act of terrorism. It's particularly brutal. I don't know that doesn't deserve some kind of review.
That was a thing for me, was the bail. I mean, yeah. $1,000?
Yeah, for her life. I mean,
it's hard not to see that as an attempted murder with a lethal weapon, which is, I mean, an SUV, as we've just seen, is a lethal weapon. So it still doesn't make any sense to me why he drove where he went. Things about this that just make no sense. It makes it doubly tragic or triply tragic.
I thought, boy, when next time I go to a parade, the same way. Next time I drive through Chicago, I'm always now looking out for what could happen to me next. I thought that after Charlottesville, if I'm ever in a parade, I'm going to make sure that I anticipate whatever's going to be coming down the road. It's a crazy way to live, isn't it?
We shouldn't have to live like that at all. You know, it's funny you mention that. I'm driving 5 hours to Ohio tomorrow, and I'm seeing expressway shootings. And I'm just like, wow, do I need to like avoid the expressway and just like go through Gary? Like, what do
Well, no, hold on now. Hold on.
Are you from Gary, John? Is that what you're telling me?
No. I'm just suggesting the expressway. Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. I mean, but I'd stay on the expressway in general.
Hey, I was on the Dan Ryan yesterday. In fact, I don't know if I told you guys this, but last night I was in Woodlawn. I slept on the roof on Martin Luther King Drive at my friend Corey Brooks' church because he's trying to raise money for a community center across the street.
Yeah, and Corey Brooks, good guy.
He is. I love that dude. And our politics are not the same, but he's living his life to make that community better. That's the thing that matters. But as my Uber was taking me down the street, I'm looking out the windows left and right. The Uber guy seemed to be cool about it, but I was nervous. I'm like, okay, what's your plan when we come up to this next light? Are you leaving enough room to get around the car in front of us if we need to do that? That's the way I drive through all of Chicago now.
I've always driven that way through Chicago. When I was at City News Bureau, the cop in the 90s, the cops told us that.
Really? I had never thought about that.
Leave a light and a half in front of you, no matter where.
Really? I've never heard that before, but that's the way we do it now.
Yep.
What do you guys think of this? At that Ulta cosmetic store, I guess, is what they sell in Oak Brook, thieves smashed and grabbed and ran off with merchandise. They did the same in Norridge at an Ulta store. And then days later, 14 thieves grabbed merchandise from the Louis Vuitton store in Oak Brook again on cue, like a flash mob. They suddenly start ransacking the place. And an even bigger group did the same thing at a Nordstrom store in San Francisco. Eric and I, you were looking at the numbers at this with me. I had it at 25 cars. You said it was like 80 people. Is that the number you saw?
The news report said 80 people did the smash and grab or whatever you call it, and they just stormed the store, and that there were 10 vehicles outside, and they had strategically placed the vehicles to block other traffic coming in and stuff. So it was extremely well planned and orchestrated.
And with the exception of a few people, they got away with it. I hope those people know who the other people were. When I talked to the chief of police in Oak Brook about what the options are for the stores or the personnel, like maybe a security guard there, he said, you can't shoot these people. You can't shoot them. And if there's 14 of them, they're going to run you over. So what are you going to do? They get away with it. Maybe you get the license plate and track them down. But it doesn't seem like we have a very good set of strategies out there to stop this latest trend, which is really unsettling. You watch these videos, the brazenness of it is just amazing, isn't it? It's appalling. You could walk into a store, you and your buddies, with a garbage bag, just put stuff in there, just put, and then walk out.
It makes you kind of want to be a criminal.
I'm telling you, you don't even have to. You don't even have to work nights. You can do it in the middle of the day. You know, at least you used to have to like have a fancy glass cutter and rappel on a string or something like that. Now you just walk in and take stuff.
Now you just false get with bottom, a few of your false friends. Bottom bags and so on.
Yes.
Maybe I'm alone. I find it hard to get my blood pressure up for a bunch of Louis Vuitton bags. I know I shouldn't. It is shocking to see. Maybe I'm part of the problem. I just kind of go, well, what? This is the world today as it is. This is a trend in crime. I think the trend will go away. I don't think it. I don't know. I think these are like deep societal problems we're talking about here, where people are going to get together and do this. There's a need in for these people to do this. What is that need? Why are people like this? There's not a lot of people wanting to get jobs. Like, there's a lot of young people that don't get jobs anymore. There's not a lot of summer, winter jobs for them. Like, unless we're going to really tackle this, then why spend 5 minutes on the cosmetic angle of a Louis Vuitton store being stolen? That's
so
insured.
In summary, it's kind of okay.
Go ahead, kids. No, it's not okay. It's not okay. I don't, but you're right. You can't hire security guards to shoot them. Police officers, it's a tough job to hire right now anyways. And do you really want four armored cars in front of every single
if they shot store? Those kids walking out that store, I would have been okay with it.
Shot those kids? Really, John?
Okay, I want to take that back. But okay. Remember the other day when you had
in the foot, baby.
Right, in the foot, in the butt. Man. Shoot him in the butt. I mean, really, it's just like, Jesus, you got nothing. You got nothing against these kids. And yeah, I don't care about Louis Vuitton bags, but no, I do care about this. I care about this trend. It really bothers me.
It's not just happening at Louis Vuitton stores, right? It's happening at places like Walgreens and things like that. And the question is, probably all of us at one point or another have been to some of these grocery stores in really poor neighborhoods where everything is behind plexiglass and you got to walk in and order and they serve you through a lazy Susan. You got to pay them so that every store is like a currency exchange. I could see that happening with some of these high-end stores. Like, if you want to be a customer at Louis Vuitton, you're going to have to go through and give them some ID and go through a revolving door. And
Apple Store does it in some places.
The diamond stores on Diamond Row, if you go to buy a diamond ring downtown, you get buzzed in.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine some very high security measures so that you can't get at the merchandise. And I understand it when it's in a really bad neighborhood or when you've got diamonds for sale or so on. But we may see, just like you say it's happening at Apple stores. I hadn't heard that.
I meant the Apple stores is where they have that level of security where you're buzzed in, or sometimes there's plexiglass, big separation between customers and the products.
And the merchandise. Yeah, I can see that happening in more and more and more stores.
I think they could just sort of also, you could still have the stuff on display. It doesn't need to be behind plexiglass, but maybe it's sort of locked in somehow, so you can't just sort of grab it, you know,
like razor blades.
No, I just sort of mean, you know, maybe there's some kind of a thing that sort of you have something that's attached to like a stack of sweaters, and then you have to sort of undo the lever to sort of pull a sweater off or something. Unlock some, just sort of a mechanism to lock things in. You know, I'm thinking of rows of purses and things like that. And there are sort of smaller items when you go downtown. And this has always been the case. They're behind glass. So
you know, they do that at Nordstrom to the Canada Goose. Have you seen that? The Canada Goose coats are all locked up on a rack. At least the last time I saw them, that was the case. And I'm trying to remember, I was at a Walgreens and I was buying something. It wasn't razor blades because those have been locked up for a while. It was a new thing that was not that expensive. And I thought, wow, you know, we're locking up aspirin or it was like shaving cream, just some.
I got my Prilosec here. My heartburn medication is locked up.
Seriously.
I had to wait at the front of the Jewel for 15 minutes for them to find it. That was so embarrassing.
Same for my allergy meds, Zyrtec.
Prilosec for John Hanson on line 4.
I'm glad you care, John. I'm glad somebody does, to the point of trying to figure this out. I think that part of my reservation is that I'm so worried about the pendulum swing of an uptick in violence like we saw in the early 90s to the complete overreaction of the 1994 crime bill, and that this pendulum just continues to wobble where we over police, where we over prosecute. And maybe that's good to satisfy a couple stolen stores. And it's an important problem, but I guess I feel like the more we add fuel, and it, rightfully so, these are important things, the more likely you're to see this violent pendulum swing the other way, and then we're fighting that 20 years from now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I also think that we have seen these sort of smash and grabs, these organized things, on the one hand. This, to me, feels like a statement about wealth and the divide. And I know we've discussed this, but to me, that's all that this feels like.
You know, staying with John here on how it matters. If you're a major city like Chicago or a major area like Chicagoland, this is happening in LA as well. And you see smash and grabs happening, then that makes people from out of town be like, maybe I don't want to go shop there. Maybe I want to go somewhere else where that's less likely. And of course, that trickles down to the economy and things like that, or whether the stores even want to stay there. If you go to Gold Coast here in Chicago, even though I know this wasn't happening in the Mag Mile, but if you're in Gold Coast now, there's an amazing amount of stores that are just barren.
Yeah,
they're empty. Yes,
just empty now. It didn't used to be that way. And I've talked to some people that literally said, "Yeah, we moved because of all the stuff that went down. We just couldn't justify the expense of having to clean up broken windows all the time." So
yeah, I got friends that left the West Loop for that reason. And it's funny you mention that, though, Brandon, because so I told you I was up on the roof with my friend Pastor Corey Brooks in Woodlawn, and he said, "What really bothers me is," and he said, "It's a great place to live, grow up," and he lives there. So I guess I'll take him at his word. But he says, "It bothers me that people won't come here because they're afraid of Woodlawn. If they get on the south side, they're really nervous about that." And I said, "Pastor, people feel that way about the Gold Coast. Talk to people in the suburbs or Minneapolis and say, come to Chicago and spend a weekend. They go, oh, Chicago's too scary for me. I can't come to Chicago." They're definitely not want to come into Woodlawn, for crying out loud. But these things trickle up that way.
I trust you. If you were king, to thread the needle of policing, right? But I don't trust the people that run on this stuff,
right,
and make the laws. Like, if it was intellectuals who could see the benefit of, you know, being tough on these kids for what it is, but let's not start throwing a bunch of, let's not set a difference between powder and crack cocaine and really punish people one over the other. You know, like, that's my problem, is that I do not trust the leaders to navigate this in a delicate manner that does not set relations back.
Well, this is the Kim Fox thing, right? Isn't her whole attitude, let's not make harder criminals out of these kids, let's not keep them in jail any longer than we have to? And you know what? I'm of a mind lately, I'm pissed. I'm like, you know what? If the word is that it's too easy in Chicago, and this is the evidence of that, or San Francisco is the evidence of that, and I do take your point, Lisa, I think it's more than just this. These do feel like statement crimes, like I'm mad at the man and the world or something, but whatever. I'm coming around to, like, screw it. Let's put people in jail for a while, which is exactly the pendulum you're talking about, isn't it?
Now, yep.
I'm going to be on the wrong side of history with that, but that's just what it's feeling like to me right now. That's just where my heart is on this thing.
I think it's going to take a while too to discern whether people are truly not. I mean, you hear a lot about these statements like, okay, the cash bail system is keeping people out. I think it's all anecdotal. I think it's going to take a while to discern whether that is the case, and that's what is driving this.
Yeah. By the way, let's talk about Matt Nagy and the Chicago Bears. Earlier today, Mark Kunkel, who reports for Patch, said that he had it on good authority, so much so that he tweeted, and then I kind of ran with it, that Matt Nagy is going to get fired after the game on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. Was it Nagy, John, or the Bears that say that's not the case? Who's refusing?
I listened to part of the press conference, and there still seemed to be some wishy-washiness. Did you hear any definitive statement from the Bears or Nagy that this report was not true? I was doing the Christmas tree thing, for the record, as you know.
Nagy said, according to the Tribune, the report is, quote, not accurate, end quote, saying he's not been informed, and I think that's where we get at the wishy-washy, has not been informed that Thursday will be his final game as head coach. And then he goes on to say, my focus is on these players in Detroit. The only thing we can do is focus on the now.
That's what I heard, and I was like, I think Conkle got it.
Gunkel's right. That's the sound of a man who got fired.
Yep.
Well, if he beats Detroit, and got to say the odds must be with the Bears. The Lions are just awful this year, as they are most years. And if he loses to Detroit, no matter what he says today, he's going to be gone. Now, I believe the Bears have never fired a coach in
That's
the middle
correct.
Of the season.
Never. Never.
It's just maybe the McCaskey
700
way.
Years they've never done
and,
it.
And of course, you got to wonder, like, okay, who are you going to get at this point of the season? What difference is it going to make? The Bears are not going to make the playoffs. Wait till the end of the season. See which head coaches may become available, or maybe who you can lure away from the college ranks. And I mean, just take a deep breath, because the Bears suck this year, and they're not going to get better. And it doesn't. And the head coach can only do so much at this point. So, you know, I would say that they might fire him if he beats the Lions. They're not going to fire him after he wins.
I mean the Lions have
why
won
because
game
what the season is saved. We beat the Lions.
they tied one game. I just want to say that it's very fortunate that Brandon and I are even speaking this week, because Michigan Wolverines are playing his Ohio State Buckeyes for pretty much all the marbles.
Everyone cares about this. Yeah,
you know, Nagy and Nagy talks like a college coach, doesn't he? You know, it's about these young men, and he has these long wordy answers, and
coaches like one too.
there was a player that was quoted recently. He said, you know, we're tired of hearing this, you know, we gotta figure out ways to win this and that. He's like, we just gotta do it. And he's like, talking is not gonna do anything. You know?
But speaking of the players, this is coming off a report that the players are talking extensively about not wanting Matt Nagy as their football coach anymore. I think the McCaskies realize, well, maybe I'm giving them too much credit, that, yes, does it matter if they fire Matt Nagy in the long run, Eric Zorn, right now? No. But I think they want to show, we're listening. We hear you. And quite literally, I mean, the chance of fire Nagy at the Bears game, at the Bulls game, Nagy's son's high school game.
Oh, which, that's terrible.
Everyone's going crazy about one way or the other.
Yeah.
Matt Nagy's son is playing
last night when they did that.
Nagy's son is playing in a high school game, and the opposite team's student section is chanting fire Nagy. That principal apologized the next day and said, or today he apologized for it and said, you know, whatever it is you're supposed to say. I feel so bad for Nagy's kid. I'm sure he heard that. That's his dad. That's somebody's son out there. It's hard enough being 17 years old, let alone having to live in a town where everybody just says your dad is the dumbest, worst coach ever. I suppose you don't listen to the radio when you're that family, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know how you insulate yourself from that, but boy, you sure want to try.
We don't treat these coaches enough as people. I'm usually very hesitant to call for a coach to be fired for that reason, because it is a job and they're feeding their family. But with Matt Nagy, he got to go. And my defense of getting rid of him as soon as possible, the sooner you get rid of him, the sooner you have that opening there, and any potential head coaching candidates are going to look at the Bears right away. Mm-hmm. And the best candidates will look at the Bears right away, because they're the first ones to have an opening. You have your kind of your pick of the cream of the crop, in a sense. If you wait till the end of the season, Denver Broncos might be making a move. That'd be a better coaching job. Oakland Raiders might be making a move. That's a better coaching job. So then you start to lose some of the top candidates. So
Oakland
that would be
Raiders.
The justification, I would think. Yeah, I think it's Vegas. Vegas Raiders.
My bad. I was going to say, you're old school.
Yeah, I'm never going to get that out of my head.
Why are the Bears such a revered franchise in the NFL? They have one Super Bowl. Yes, they won a bunch of NFL championships before that. I know they're a founder of the league. I know that, in fact, their founder founded the league. I think they're like on the same scale as like the Pittsburgh Pirates. Like, why are the Bears this team that people want to flock to, or that the NFL really wants to do well? Makes no sense.
It's the third largest media franchise. Market. It's the media market, too.
And the market, yeah. Legacy franchise, media market.
Stadium by the lake.
Stadium by the lake, I guess. Yeah.
For the time
for a
being.
While.
Yeah.
I mean, the appeal for a coach coming in this time is, hey, you guys might be moving to Arlington. There's some new opportunities for revenue. That's a big sell as well. And then you got Justin Fields as quarterback.
That's what I was thinking, Brandon. Don't you want the keys to that car, man? I mean, yeah. I think that as bad as the team is now, I think, you know, maybe they're going to get some draft picks. I don't know how you reestablish an NFL lineup, but team, but boy, you sure got a good quarterback, and that's the piece we've been missing forever. Well, who knows? Maybe you get a good coach. Yeah, and then all our problems are solved. Then we'll win the Super Bowl.
That's all it takes.
Oh, man.
All right, last question. What are you thankful for? It's the cheesy podcast radio show lazy host question. What are you thankful for this year? Well, anything come to mind?
Well, besides the obvious, you know, family and friends and podcasts.
Yeah, you can't do
family
that.
People. But, you know, the thing that I'm really grateful for is how all this technology has made this entire pandemic, which is still going on, livable for people like me. And I think everyone around this virtual table here, I'm just the technology that has made my life so much better during this time. And that's my shallow answer to that.
That's not bad. I mean, especially since people decry technology these days. I'm judging your thankfulness now, aren't I? But but it just seems like everybody just says, oh, the internet's terrible, Twitter's terrible, Facebook's terrible, and everybody is on those platforms. And there's, I see some pretty good stuff out there, too. I know that's not exactly what you're saying, Eric, but that's a nice way to put it.
You know, the obvious would be thankful for good health in, you know, times like this where people are really struggling. And I've gotten more and more friends that have caught COVID, and, you know, the girl that I was dating that was unvaccinated, you know, that was a thing. So good health for sure. But, you know, also, like, I'm really thankful for TikTok. I discovered the TikTok app. I don't do TikToks, but it's provided lots of free entertainment and lots of laughs throughout the days. So I'm very appreciative of that.
I am really thankful that in April, my employment status changed a little bit. Meaning I had more free time on my hands. I loved doing the daily TV show, but stepping away a little bit from that and still working with some of the great folks over at Weigel Broadcasting, Brandon and them, doing more of a weekly show, getting to do a little bit more radio this year, golfing a lot more. I have rediscovered what it means to be happy. And I really, having just a little extra time in the day, I'm like, there's moments I stop and I think, I'm like, should I be happy? And I've learned this year, if you're happy, don't second guess it. And I'm happy right now.
Love that.
You know, and I'm going to stick with the cheesy. I'm thankful for my husband and extended family. And it's
boo!
And I don't care.
Making
what
us
you
all
think.
Look bad.
I'm thankful
Lisa.
That I don't care what you think. So,
yeah.
You do know
there
about,
it is.
You do know about TikTok, go. Right? Because TikTok is this thing. You can watch dance videos.
Yeah,
it's really awesome.
I don't give a. Can't say it on the radio. Yeah.
Rats. Well, because I like Netflix, but that's a good thing, too. I like my TV set. You know, Brenda and I downsized, if you will. We sold our condo in the city and bought a house out in Ottawa, Illinois, which is a little town about 90 minutes from downtown Chicago where I work. And I make that commute twice a week. And it has done wonders for my mental health. We have a little more space. We still have a tiny little condo in the city, like the size of a room in this house is the condo where I live half the week and work. And then on Fridays, I do my radio show from out there. When I get out there, the big screw in my back turns the other way. It just feels so much better. And I don't know exactly why. I don't know what's happening there. It's also, I've discovered this, that if you are separated from your wife for half the week, when you do see your wife... It's, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yes.
I think we like each other a lot more right now that we're not living in the same house for 7 days. We're living in the same house about 3.5-4 days. That's been a very nice thing. This sort of re-energizing our affection for each other has been very nice.
I want to hear what Brenda has to say about this.
I was just going to say, I think I learned that Brenda doesn't listen to this podcast.
Yeah. She's pushing for 5 and 2. She wants maybe I'm gone 5 days. She'd really like me for 1 day out there in Ottawa. But
you know, John, that Friday show just isn't, I think you ought to do that back in the city.
I am petrified that when I'm doing the show from my home in Ottawa, and by the way, my colleagues did their shows from their homes for a year during the pandemic, but I'm just so nervous that there's going to be some glitch or that it won't sound like I'm studio quality. I'm always calling back to the station. Hey, is it going okay? Does it sound all right? Is the connection good? And they go, yeah, you're fine. And the content's so-so, but the signal sounds good. And so that's my thing. Eric just blinked out because he had a hard finish at 2:15, and it's 2:14:30. So I guess that's our cue to wrap things up. Thanks, Eric. Lisa?
Hi.
John and Brandon. Hey, guys, happy Thanksgiving to you all. My best to your families and TikTok videos and whatever it is that you're doing.
You too, John. Enjoy. Thanks for hey, we're thankful for you for hosting this podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah, very thankful for you.
Yeah, definitely. Well, this is something that none of us gets paid for, but I think we all enjoy doing, and I hope our listeners are thankful for it as well. So thanks, guys. We're produced by Ashley Byhun and Elif Garris. We did it on Tuesday this week because of the holiday. We'll drop another podcast on you next Wednesday. Okay, guys? Oh, awesome. Thank you. See you later.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye. Yes.
Bye, all.
Everyone.
Enjoy.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.